The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj on April 30th, 1980 in Los Angeles, California. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 17, Text 9.
At the time, King Prithu was enthroned by the great sages and brahmanas and declared to be the protector of the citizens. There was a scarcity of food grains. The citizens actually became skinny due to starvation. Therefore, they came before the king and informed him of their real situation. Information is given herein concerning the selection of the king by the brahmanas. According to the Varnashrama system, the brahmanas are considered to be the heads of the society and therefore to be situated in the topmost social position. The Varnashram Dharma, the institution of four varnas and four ashramas, is very scientifically designed. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Varnashrama Dharma is not a man-made institution, but is God-made. In this narration, it is clearly indicated that the brahmanas used to control the royal power. When an evil king like Vaina ruled, the brahmanas would kill him through their brahminical powers and would select the proper ruler by testing his qualifications. In other words, the brahmanas, the intelligent men or great sages, would control the monarchical powers. Here we have an indication of how the brahmanas elected King Prithu to the throne as the protector of the citizens being skinny due to hunger, approached the king and informed him that necessary action should be taken. The structure of the Varnashram Dharma was so nice that the brahmanas would guide the head of state. The head of state would then give protection to the citizens. The kshatriyas would take charge of protecting the people in general. And under the protection of the kshatriyas, the vaishyas would protect the cows, produce food grains, and distribute them. Sudras, the working class, would help the higher three classes by manual labor. This is the perfect social system. Maharaj Prithu was enthroned to protect the citizens. That is the duty of the king, to protect the citizens. The duty of the brahmanas is to engage in self-realization, to guide the society in religious principles, and especially to guide the king, who is responsible to manage the society. The brahmanas are not subject to the limitations of the king's law. They are above the king's law, but they have to act according to religious principles. Should they act outside of the codes intended for brahmanas, then they are subject to being punished. But the king cannot control the brahmanas. He respects them as his superior advisors and spiritual masters. So this brahminical culture was going quite well for millions of years. And in the brahminical culture, simply the brahmanas and the vaishyas and the sudras, they would all live very simply in grass huts. In fact, except for the kings, no one else would basically live in big palaces or brick houses. It was unnecessary. Climate was nice. Simple living, high thinking. There was no necessity. Even today, actually, grass hut is in many ways more comfortable than the brick and stone house. When Srila Prabhupada was living in the grass hut at Sri Mayapur in 1972, at that time our construction had begun, 72, 73, And he pointed to the concrete steel structure rising on the eastern side and said, that building is in the mode of passion. That building is in the Rajaguna. And this grass hut, this is in the mode of goodness. This is perfect for practicing spiritual life. This is all that one needs. We can simply live by the side of the Ganges in such a grass hut and chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Enough. That is all we need for ourselves. But in order to preach, in order to attract people to the shelter of Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, therefore we must construct these big buildings which are in the mode of passion. Because who will come in this Kali Yuga to this grass hut? But if we have guest house, temple, if we have facility, people will come. Therefore, we are building these structures. Not for our own comfort, not for our own living, but to attract the neophytes, to attract the new devotees to come and reside in the holy dham. So Prabhupada, he liked very much the grass hut. Grass hut has very thick roof. It is cool in the hot summer and it is warm in the winter. It is very nice insulation. Especially with thick mud walls, one feels very comfortable. In fact, in the hot weather, the concrete buildings become very hot. You can put your hand on the wall, it will be heated. But the grass hut with mud wall, mud is always cool. And over the mud, one places cow dung, little cow dung with water made into a slurry, and that is spread over the floor and the walls. And it appears freshly plastered, very smooth, and it is a natural repellent for flies. Flies do not like to land upon it. So, in every way, it's very sattvic, very good, very aesthetically pleasing. It immediately makes one's mind peaceful. So, in those days, the brahmanas would live in such houses. Everyone would live in such houses except for the kings. In fact, even till today, the name of bricklayer in India, bricklayer, mason, is known as Raja Mistri. Raja means king and Mistri means craftsman. The king's craftsman. Because the bricklayer would only work for the king. Only a king would be that ambitious to use a bricklayer and build a brick house and palace and castle and so on. So he was exclusively the Raja Mistri, or the king of all mysteries, the one who worked for the king. No one else required a bricklayer because they lived in mud houses. For them, they used the gouramis or the bamboo craftsmen. So when the anthropologists and the historians, they're looking for the traces of the great civilizations, of course they find very few. They find a few palaces and they wonder that therefore there was no human beings beyond 3,000 years that had any intelligence. They're all Neanderthal or whatever they call them. You know, so this is simply their illusion, that they're not understanding that for literally millions of years there have been intelligent, far more cultured people than we have today living on this planet, but their standard of living was on a higher platform. They believed in simple material facility, and philosophically, psychically, mystically, spiritually, they were far advanced and cultured. There are temples in South India which are standing so long that no one can say. There are some temples which are coming from the time of Maharaj Kulakshetra. Maharaj Kulakshetra is definitely, as well as Ramachandra from Treta Yuga. Kulakshetra was from the Satya Yuga. The story is that one of the Kulakshetra, the deity of Padmanaksha, lotus-eyed, Padmanavaksha, he sings a prayer that let my mind be attracted to your lotus feet, just like the lotus are attractive to the swans. So Maharaj Kulakshetra, his temple we can find about 30 miles from Tiruchirappalli. One sage was worshipping those deities and he was immediately promoted to the Satya Loka. That Maitreya or some, I forget which sage was worshipping, I forget now. Must not be Maitreya. And he was immediately elevated to the Satya Loka. Lord Brahma sent down his Bhiman and he was whisked away. And so he requested Kulakshetra to take care of the deities. So then Kulakshetra Raja, who was the great king and devotee, he worshipped those deities. The deities of Sri Ranganath are personal deities of Ramachandra, which were taken there by Vibhishena, the younger brother of Ravana, on his way to Sri Lanka, and by tricks of Ganesha and Lord Brahma. They are still today at the Sri Rangam Island in the center of the Kaveri River. So these temples, they are standing there for millions of years. And they are going under reconstruction and addition. But the main temple rooms are there, solid stone, and the deities are there for millions of years. So, and those times, simply the temples and the king's palaces, these were the only things which were. And king's palaces were not maintained because they're always warring. The ruins of king palaces in Vijayanagara, in Karnataka, they are still standing since thousands and thousands of years. So in this way, it's a bewilderment how historians come up with these formulas saying that there's no civilized people when the Sanskrit literatures like the Bhagavatam give us atomic theory in Sanskrit and so many things. We can just understand that they're talking through their hat. So we simply accept the Vedic evidence, not the scientists and the historians' concoctions, based upon the way they like to see things in terms of Darwin theory and so on and so forth. The Brahminical culture during the time of Lord Chaitanya in the Kali Yuga had undergone tremendous changes. They had become very rigid. They had become very stifled in their concepts. They were claiming simply by birthright that they were Brahmanas. Therefore, when the Muhammadan rulers came and started sprinkling water, then they would not accept them back, anyone who was sprinkled. It was such an easy thing to convert someone. If you simply took some water, drank in it, or drank from it, or spit in it, if you were a Muhammadan, and sprinkled it on somebody, he was considered to be contaminated. If he went to the Brahmana and said, "What is the cure?" He said, "There is a cure. You take lead and you boil it and drink it. Then you will be absolved of your sin." So this was a very wonderful cure, which very few people were eager to accept very readily. Although some did, even. So most of the people, the lower class people, they saw that these Brahmins are so envious of us, and they're not accepting us back. On top of it, the Muhammadan rulers, they're offering us such nice facilities. So, alright, let us stay Muhammadan. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came in such a time when there was a lot of stringent caste considerations amongst the Brahmins. So before Lord Chaitanya came, of course in the line of Sri Madhvacharya, there was an understanding of Krishna. Of course, Krishna Udupi Temple in South India, established by Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya was a worshipper of Krishna. And he translated the Bhagavatam and gave his commentary. Or he gave his commentary in Sanskrit. The followers of Madhvacharya, however, up until about 550, 600 years, had not entered into the actual understanding or the active propagation of what is Krishna's relationship with Srimati Radharani. That was first revealed by Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri, Sripad Madhavendra Puri, he came as a forerunner to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and introduced by his own realization and by the scriptural evidence the worship of Radha Krishna. And he was completely absorbed in worshipping Radha Krishna. He had many disciples, of which the prominent disciple was Iswarapuri. Iswarapuri was not the prominent disciple in terms of constant association, in terms of high learning. There were other people who considered themselves more advanced in learning, who considered themselves more intimate. But Iswarapuri was very eager to get the mercy of Madhavendra Puri. So Madhavendra Puri, in his he would every day go and have his nature call at a particular place. And Iswarapuri would go to that place after he's finished and cleaned it up personally with his own hands. And of course, Madhavendra Puri's stool smelled just like roses. They were completely pure because of the purity of Madhavendra Puri. But other people were not eager for such a service. They were happy enough to prepare the prasad or to do the other things. But they just more or less avoided that particular service. While Iswarapuri, he was very eager to take the most menial position with a spiritual master. So he was looking every chance he could get for doing the most insignificant menial service for Madhavendra Puri. And in the end of Madhavendra Puri's manifested pastimes, he was absorbed in so much ecstatic symptoms that even where he would lay, he wouldn't get up for anything. He would, so that was also cleaned up by Iswarapuri. So, and this way, Iswarapuri, he actually got the full blessing of Madhavendra Puri for his complete humility and surrender and service. And therefore, he was so fortunate as to be the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, today is a very wonderful day, because see, Madhavendra Puri actually, by his mercy, one can become immediately enthused with pure devotional service. He is the one who has brought first the worship of Radha Krishna into this world as a forerunner of Lord Chaitanya, who introduced it on the broad scale. But Lord Chaitanya allowed Madhavendra Puri to manifest that first and give his devotee, therefore, some special recognition. Madhavendra Puri was never interested in personal recognition. He would always, in fact, he became very famous as a great devotee. And so crowds would come to have his darshan. And he would always have to run away because he did not want to get so much attention. There was no organization and such to protect people in those days from no private quarters. It was a different time, a different situation. And when that many people came crowding, then it was a disturbance for one's devotional service. because most of the people wanted some quick blessing so that they can have. I remember I was walking down the street in one town, and one lady came right in the middle of the street, paid a complete full dandavat. I had to stop, you know, she's like laid right across the road. Then jumped up, you know, grabbed my feet, and she started wailing and saying, please, please, my daughter has got a stomach disease you have to cure. Please give me the blessing. You know, and then, you know, if you don't give the blessing, or, you know, the magic, you know, you have to give some either talisman or blessing or something, then you're on a quarterback tackle. So you can understand that there are all kinds of people. As soon as someone in India is advertised as being a sadhu, then all kinds of people come to get blessings. 90% plus are for blessings which have nothing to do with spiritual life. So it becomes a great disturbance in many ways for the act of preaching. So Madhavendrapura, he would avoid the big crowds. He wasn't interested in recognition and cheap fame. But if someone was sincerely serious about spiritual life, then he would impart it to him and engage him in Krishna's service. And of course we know that he was so intimate that the deity would personally give orders to Madhavendrapura and send him different places and engage in his service. Kirchur Gopinath, the name Kirchur came, of course, when Gopinath stole some Kheer for Madhavendra Puri. It's all very wonderful pastimes. These are also should reinforce everyone. What is the position of the deity? It says, Guru Naramati, and the Vigraha, the Shilasu. And if we think that the Murti is made of stone, or that the Guru is an ordinary human being, then it says we are residents of hell, that the deity is Krishna, and the deity reciprocates with his devotee. I remember Srila Prabhupada, one time he entered into the temple, and he asked the pujari, after darshan, that how are the deities? And the pujari, you know, how are the deities feeling today? And Pujari looked a little bewildered. That he said, you do not know? Pujari must know how the deity is feeling. That Pujari should be so sincere that the deity will reveal his mind. Since the Pujari is revealing his mind to the deity, the deity will reveal his mind to the Pujari. Just like when Sanatana Goswami was worshipping his deity, he said, why don't you give me a little salt in the bread? Because he was just making the wheat balls and throwing them in the charcoal as they were. It's a very kind of austere type of, what do you call them, cannonballs. So deity was saying that if I could just have a little salt, I know that you're very poor, butter is very difficult to come by, but a little salt. Sanatana Goswami said, if I start giving salt, the next thing it'll be butter, then you'll want a vegetable, then I'll have to get a job. There's no end to it. So you should just excuse, otherwise it'll end up that I won't be able to perform the other services. I have to write, I have to serve my guru's order, I have to excavate these holy places, so many things. If I have to go out and get salt and everything, then it'll be very difficult. So of course then eventually Lord Krishna sent one salt merchant with a whole shipload of salt. So Sanatana Goswami could at least put a little salt in his bread. And of course the salt merchant was stuck, and by Sanatana Goswami's blessing he was able to be freed, and he built one big temple for Madana Mohana. So deity is, of course, for a non-believer, for a unfaithful person, they may not be able to understand that Krishna is there present. But actually is present. It's not an idol. When the missionaries went to India, their whole intention was to crush the Hindu Dharma. great scholars like Max Müller and others, their intention was to translate the Vedic literatures into English in such a way that people would become completely completely contaminated by a crisis of faith in their own culture. They would translate Murti as idol. And then when you look in the English dictionary, idol, it would say an imaginary form made up by pagans for worshipping, you know, so on and so forth. So by the words that they would use in translating the Vedic text, they would try to, they were trying to break up the basic faith in Vedic culture. So, of course, there are many instances. We know how in Orissa, one deity walked all the way from Vrindavan to Sakhi Gopal. The city itself is now named Sakhi Gopal. Walked all the way to Orissa, nearly 1,000 miles, or maybe even more than 1,000 miles, just for his devotee. And there are so many instances. So we should understand that Krishna, Rukmini, Dwarkadish, Guru, Gaurango, Nitai, Gaur, Jagannath, Subhadra, Balaram, they are actually present. If we are not able to see that, we're not able to understand their intention, that is our misfortune. We should lament that, you see. Generally in material life we lament when our husband or wife speak harsh words to us. We lament when we're not getting some nice situation for our eating, sleeping, and so on. And these things we lament. But in actual devotional service, we also lament that we are not very advanced in our Krishna consciousness, that we're not able to please the deity, please our spiritual master. But that lamentation, that anxiety, is actually blissful, because it is a real consideration. It is based on love. Actually, every devotee should become so advanced that by the mercy of his spiritual master, the deity will be kind enough to bless that devotee fully, even give personal advice. It is nothing unexpected. Can easily happen. It's the Lord is independent. He can do what He wants. But of course, there's nothing that we can imitate, nothing we can force. We simply have to serve, washing the floor, doing our service, and serving the deity. And when the deity is pleased, then He can begin to advise. Don't fan me in that way, a little bit to the left. Today the sweet rice had salt in it, but it was made with great devotion. Whatever. So Srinivas Acharya, he was a preacher. He didn't have any initial temple. He was very eager to get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he left Bengal and he went, walked all the way down. You see, he approached the devotees at Bengal, and they said, you have to go down to Orissa, that is where Lord Chaitanya is. So he went all the way down to Orissa by walking. It takes some time. And as he was going, finally he reached Jagannath Puri. He saw there was a tumultuous crowd everywhere. People were crowding outside the temple, and the doors were shut. And he came and he asked, where is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? I want to have his darshan. And after walking so far, people said, you do not know. You do not know. Lord Chaitanya has left. He's gone. He just entered into the temple. He never has come out. That is why all these people are here. It is a disappearance ceremony. He has disappeared from this earth. His leela is finished. That is why everyone is crying and weeping. There no longer we can have the darshan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srinivas Acharya, he was completely shocked. He fell unconscious. Then he went and he tried to find who can advise me, who can. I want to study Bhagavatam. They said, well, Gadadhar Das, Gadadhar Pandit, he is present, you can learn from him. He said, I'll be very pleased to instruct you in Bhagavatam, but our Bhagavatam is no more. We have been reading Bhagavatam, and by the constant tears flowing from our eyes as we're reading the pastimes of the Lord, our Bhagavatam is completely washed out. So we know the things by heart, basically, but we cannot instruct, you see. So you should go to Navadvip, and there they can rewrite the Bhagavatam and bring a Bhagavatam back here, and I will teach you. Because at that time, Navadvip was where all the Pandits were. All the big Brahmins were in Navadvip. If you wanted to get a Bhagavatam, you just walked up to Navadvip and got it written for a few months and then walked back. It's very convenient. You can understand that those who are reading the Bhagavatam were very great souls. So, Srinivasacharya set off back for Navadvip and engaged some brahmanas, and they hand wrote the 18,000 slokas of the Bhagavatam on talpata, palm leaves. Then, with those palm leaves, again he departed back for Puri. When he reached Jagannath Puri, again he saw there was a big festival, but everybody was crying. Then he said, that, what is this? And they said, you don't know? Gadadhar Das had just disappeared. Again, he was completely crushed. He had come all the way, and just before he reached, Gadadhar Das had wound up his pastimes. So then he tried to find out that who is there that can instruct me? I said, now everyone is gone. If you go to Vrindavan there, Rupin Sanatan, that time one brother was left, I forget. They are still there. If you go to them, they can instruct you. Rupa Goswami. So then Srinivasacharya, he walked to Vrindavan, walking with his Bhagavatam. Walking to Vrindavan, there he saw outside the temple, another huge crowd, big kirtan, people crying. Rupin Sanatan, they disappeared. This time he was just completely like a madman, wailing, crying, how will I learn the Bhagavatam? Everyone is gone. Everyone is gone. He completely just fell unconscious. He woke up and he was in the house of Jiva Goswami. So Jiva Goswami instructed him in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So during that time, Krishnadas Kaviraj also, he was writing and completed the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Srinivasacharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and some other devotees like Ramachandra, when we say Ramachandra Sangha, Ramachandra Kaviraj, there are 8 Kovirajas, 12 Gopalas. So 4 or 5 devotees, they were heading with a big trunk with Bhagavatam on the top, Chaitanya Charitamrita on the bottom, and they're heading back towards Bengal. As they were going, then they were entered into Bengal. There was one king in Bankura. These people say, this part of the story, according to the way I've heard it from other Vaishnavas, that this king had some astrologer who was very expert in finding out when the travelers coming there carried some treasure. So he did his calculation and he said, there's 4 or 5 sadhus coming, and they have with them most valuable thing, most valuable treasure. So the king sent out his soldiers who go as bandits, dacoits, and while they were asleep, they stole away the trunk of all the scriptures from the bullock cart. And when Srinivasacharya woke up, he was crushed. So Narottam Thakur separated, went to Denur, where he met later with Janavi Devi. Janavi Devi was in charge of the preaching for some time after Nityananda had assigned her. And that's another story. Narottam Thakur's kirtans were introduced at that time. And Srinivasacharya, he was determined that I have to find Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, Krishna Das Kaviraj had spent such his complete old age, so much effort. He's bringing this Chaitanya Charitamrita had never been exposed to the Bengalis in Bengal. This is the first edition coming back. It was stolen. Srinivasacharya, he knew that how much the devotees in Bengal would be eager to get this literature. And it was stolen. He was just completely in separation. So he went to the king. There he saw that his trunk was there. And when he opened it up, saw there were some books. Books. Closed the trunk. So he said that, don't you know what these literatures are? And he said, well, our pandits are reading, but we don't find much in it. And he said, what do they say, your pandit? They opened up, on the top, Chaitanya Charitamrita had come. And so they started to read and give their smarta commentary. And Srinivasacharya, he started saying that these people are not actually very learned. And they got very uptight, the brahmanas. How you can say. So what they're saying, you know, sounds nice, but it's not authorized. So they said, well, what do you have to say? You're talking so big. So then he sat down and started to give his lectures from Chaitanya Charitamrita, the Bhagavatam, and everyone was completely amazed. Who is this person? And he goes on preaching Jiva Goswami's, by his mercy, expounding all the Vaishnava philosophy. The king surrenders to Srinivasacharya and says, you are my guru. So he set up his sripat at Vishnupur in Bankura district and became the king's guru and established the whole district in pure Vaishnavism. From East Bengal, Narottam Thakur sent some disciples to Manipur and they established Gaudiya Vaishnavism in Manipur. In this way the preaching was going on. So, Srinivasacharya is one of the great acharyas in our line. It's his appearance day today. He actually brought the Chaitanya Charitamrita from Vrindavan to Bengal to the devotees, and we can see that in his lifetime there were so many obstacles for him to find a spiritual master. He was so eager, but every attempt he made was by will of providence, it was thwarted. But he never gave up his determination. He was firmly fixed that I must learn the Bhagavatam from simply a pure devotee, someone empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He could have hired some professional Brahmin or he could have sat down and tried to read it himself. No, he didn't want that. He knew, I must hear it from the lips of a pure devotee. And practically, he was walking to the end of the world. Through the jungle, there's no proper road, he's carrying it's a huge affair. It's not like carrying, you know, you can imagine we just carrying our Bhagavatam, it already weighs so much. Book distributors develop calluses in their shoulders. He's carrying it simply written out by hand on thick palm leaves. One must get the shelter of a spiritual master and be engaged in service and receive instruction from the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada was so kind that he came to the Western world. The devotees are so kind, they go door to door to inform the people what is the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, it's easy for them, easier for them to find spiritual master. But who is bona fide spiritual master? That is what is hard. So the actual qualification that one must be empowered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, Srinivasacharya, that so many times he was so close, yet a miss is as good as a mile. Just missed. We see ultimately Krishna had in store for him a spiritual master. Greatest scholar of our time, of our sampradaya, Jiva Goswami. One must not give up his determination to get the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Bhaktisiddhanta was refused by Gorkhishore. I will not give you initiation. Who am I? I'm just a poor, illiterate, devotee. I don't have so much learning as you. I can't give you initiation. You are very intelligent, educated. What can I teach you? The spiritual master tests the disciple. Krishna tests. Is he actually sincere? If without testing one is insincere, that is not a goodness. One should be tested. And one should be willing to undergo any test Krishna gives, either before initiation or after initiation. That is the refinement of devotional service. Srila Prabhupada, here in Los Angeles, the Tirthapad gave a little story in London, how he had cleaned Prabhupada's quarters, and he was thinking that I've cleaned these quarters first class. Actually, maybe someone, he gave two different stories. One was the cleaning the quarters. Oh, I did a very good job. Actually, this was told by Jamuna through Tirthapad. And Prabhupada walked in the room, and there in one corner of the room there was something. He said, "I want the stapler." He never used a stapler before. But she was feeling very proud that actually now I've done wonderful service for Prabhupada. I cleaned the room up perfectly. He'll be very pleased. I'll get some praise. He said, "Where's my stapler?" "A stapler?" They had to tear the whole place apart trying to find the stapler. They can't find it. Finally, they find the stapler. Prabhupada takes out the stapler, and then he puts his finger on the stapler and says, "What's this dust?" "You nonsense, you rascal! You don't know how to clean anything properly." Completely destroyed her. She walked out, realized I got the mercy. Tirthapad told the story how he was in a similar situation. He thought that everything was very nice. He was doing nice. And Srila Prabhupada came and asked Tirthapad to open the window. The Tirthapad opened the window, but the mechanism which keeps the window open was non-functional. So when he opened the window, then so then he was standing holding the window for a while trying to think what to do. And Prabhupada said, "Every time I come here this window never works, you nonsense. You can't even maintain the window. You're going to maintain a whole ashram?" And on and on and on. And he said, "Put my cane under the window and keep it open." So spiritual master, his duty is to train the disciple in devotional attitude. What is that? Service attitude. Actually, to get chastised by the spiritual master is a higher blessing than to get praise. Praise actually is not good. If one is being praised by the spiritual master, the disciple doesn't like that. He knows something is wrong. If one is being chastised, that is very good, very healthy. That is the actual mercy. Because our tendency, immediately we think how wonderful I'm doing. I'm doing such wonderful service for Krishna. And that means that our service attitude has gone down to practically nil. Service attitude means no matter how much we do, we're thinking that I didn't do it well enough. If I just had a little more time, I must have missed something. You're always a complete anxiety thinking how to improve, how to do better, the desire to serve. So there's the limit of perfection is unlimited. It's infinite. Limitation is a time or something else, but the eagerness of making it even better. That is the basic higher intensity of service attitude. So the spiritual master has to sometimes crush the advanced disciples with criticism to develop their service attitude. That is particularly the position of the guru or the spiritual master, not others. That is the spiritual master's position. Of course, in India, Srila Prabhupada, he would always, at least in Mayapur, I don't know other parts, but in Mayapur, we would have between 12 and 48 hours. He would come and say, oh, very nice, this nice, that. We were holding our breath. We knew we had 12 hours. He'd give us, like, first of all, to encourage us. And then, at any given point, suddenly the axe would fall. What is that garbage? What is this garbage? Everywhere garbage. Everywhere I'm asking, and they're saying Jai Pataka, they're saying Bhavananda. Why no one else can take any responsibility here? Why this is not right? Why that? He's walking, he said, so the floors are clean? Why are these ceilings so dirty? Look in the ceiling, there's a spider web. They clean the ceiling, the spider just laying the new web. You can only look down, you cannot look up. This is not Krishna's mandir. You cannot clean. You want to simply, I'm giving my blood all over the world. I'm simply going and the book money is coming and you simply want to see the whole thing crumble. How will things go on? Not even cleaning the ceiling. What thing would hit the eye that inspired by Krishna? But that was a special mercy that, of course, now we miss. Now governing body commission, we can always be anxious that they may chastise us. Although we never want to do something to be chastised, but that is the principle of spiritual master. He has to chastise. He has to instruct. I remember Prabhupada, after a day of instruction, he would call us in and then build up our shattered consciousness. He'd say, you are so tolerant. I am so... What's the exact word he used? I can't do it justice. He said, I'm always criticizing. How do you tolerate? I'm always criticizing. But that is my position. Thankless task. Spiritual master must find out what is the defect in the disciple. If there's no defect, then he'll be already pure devotee. He'll already be at the perfectional stage. So, spiritual master means, where is the defect? Where is he not surrendering? Where is he not dedicating his life to Krishna? At what point is he failing to be completely surrendered? He has to pull out the weeds. So when you pull out the weeds, naturally the roots are grown into the soil there. It may hurt, agitate the soil. But someone has to pull out the weeds. We have to be expert in pulling out our own weeds. But the spiritual master, he is also expert in showing how to pull out weeds. What are the weeds that have to be pulled out? So today, of course, we're remembering the weed that was pulled out of this whole universe by Narasimhadev. And when Prahlad Maharaj prayed to him, he said, "Only thing I'm worried about is that I have weed in my heart. The seed of desire is so strong, that should be pulled out. That's what the devotee should be fixed upon. Not what am I doing for Krishna? What am I not yet able to surrender? What fame, adoration, distinction am I still harboring? What sense gratificatory desires am I still attached to?" And so on. The devotee should be looking, where is the seed of material desire so I can pull it out? When it comes, that, oh, this is the nonsense. Get out. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And if one gets the mercy of his spiritual master, gets the mercy of senior Vaishnavas, he should take it as mercy. Madhavendra Puri was sent by Gopal Didi, "I am feeling headache." He has no money, Madhavendra Puri. He says, "You go down," Didi says, "to South India, to Mysore." He's in Vrindavan. "Walk down to Karnataka and bring me some sandalwood." And how much sandalwood, he tells him? An immense quantity of sandalwood. My whole body has to be covered. So that's a very big task. Madhavendra Puri immediately sets off, walks how many months we don't know down to South India, somehow collects up, fills up a big load of sandalwood, has to fight off thieves and dacoits. When he gets up, he goes via Bengal to avoid the mountains, via Orissa. There, of course, Krishna said that, "All right, you just cover the sandalwood on the Gopinath deity, and that will satisfy me. There's no difference." So whether the test is given by Krishna himself or by the spiritual master or by Krishna in our trying to get to the spiritual master, we see that if someone is sincerely determined that I will find the absolute truth, I will become established in pure devotional service, nothing can stop. It doesn't mean that, oh, you have to first be a pure devotee, then I will start to. You have to desire, "I want to be a pure devotee. I want to be situated in pure devotional service." And then nothing can stop the progress of that. Just like the river is flowing, in Mayapur the river is flowing to the ocean. They try to dam up the river, especially when they build the Indian dams, and they all break. Nothing can stop these rivers. If it doesn't break, it floods and goes around. But it's going to reach the ocean, one way or the other. We have to have that desire that I want to reach the ocean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of devotional nectar. No matter what Krishna puts before me, then I know that this is simply to purify me. This is simply to qualify me, to be eligible for that mercy. Wherever there's an obstacle, Krishna also gives the solution. He also gives the strength to overcome. So, when we remember the previous acharyas, like Madhavendra Puri, Srinivasa Acharya, Prahlad, we see that there's difficulties. That's why some people say, why become a devotee? Even all the great devotees, there's always difficulty. That is how Krishna shows who is a devotee. When there's difficulty, he doesn't waver, he doesn't stop. He goes on. Then everyone can see, oh, he is a devotee. In spite of so many difficulties, he continued. He just stuck to his service. He didn't lose faith in his Guru and Krishna. That is what it means. Mahajana Janagata Sapunta. They're all doing the same thing. They're determined, fixed. Thank you very much.